Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Coming up on You Need Therapy.
We forget the things that as little kids that we would hear from the safe people, the empathetic witnesses in our lives, the Mr. Rogers on the TV who says, you make this day a special day by just your being you, and I like you just the way you are. Well, I remembered that. I hear that, but I'm so tempted to forget it because then I have to be, as a big grown-up, I have to go out in the world and I forgot what Mr. Rogers told me.
I started to realize that not being an expert isn't a liability, it's a real gift.
If we don't know something about ourselves at this point in our life, it's probably because it's uncomfortable to know.
If you can die before you die, then you can really live. There's a wisdom at death's door.
I thought I was insane, yeah. And I didn't know what to do because there was no internet.
I don't know, man. I feel like everything is hard.
Hey y'all, my name is Kat. I'm a human first and a licensed therapist second. And right now, I'm inviting you into conversations that I hope encourage you to become more curious and less judgmental about yourself, others, and the world around you. Welcome to You Need Therapy. Hi guys, and welcome to a new episode of You Need Therapy podcast. My name is Kat. I am the host. And before we get into today's episode, I want to give a quick reminder that although I'm a therapist and this podcast is called You Need Therapy, it does not serve as a replacement or substitute for any actual mental health services. But we always do hope that it helps you guys wherever you are along whatever journey you are on. Now, I don't even know the right word. I want to say excited or thrilled, but it doesn't really hit the mark. I think it's more of, I feel lucky, feel lucky and grateful to be able to share the conversation I'm going to share with you today. It was one that was interesting and thought-provoking and healing for me to have as a human being. And it was also unexpected in that way. So we've been talking about deconstruction on here. We've been bringing up some themes around that, the ability for us to change our minds and to use the information that we have now to make sense of the world and what that means to us. And so this episode comes in a timely manner because I have a very special guest today talking about a very special book that he has just written. And his name is Jonathan Merritt. If you are unfamiliar with him, Jonathan is an award-winning columnist and commentator on politics, spirituality, and culture, and he has been a contributing editor for The Week and has been featured on the New York Times, USA Today, The Washington Post, The Atlantic, CNN, like the list goes on and on. And he is also just a wonderful human. You know, there's those certain people that you just feel like you can open up to and talk to and sense their energy is safe. That's really how I would describe this person. I had never met him before we had this conversation, and I am so grateful to have had the opportunity to talk to him because he's somebody that if you do get that opportunity, you won't forget it. He has recently written a children's book, which I know what you're thinking, Catherine. you're talking about children's books on here. That's interesting. It's a children's book that I even said this in the conversation. This needs to be the book of the month for adult book clubs. I'm not even kidding, because even though it won't take you very long to read, you are going to be given themes and ideas and just nuggets to really wrestle through in this book. And it is a book that I think really would have made a difference for me in my childhood if there were stories like this around me. The book is called My Gunkle and Me. It's written by Jonathan, like I said, and it's illustrated by Joanna Carrillo. And I just am so excited for this to be out there. I'm so excited for you to hear Jonathan and what he has to say. And he's a great follow. I told him, and I'm going to tell you guys now, yes, I want you to get this book, and I want you to use this book as a tool to help yourself and others feel more safe and comfortable to be themselves. But I also want you guys to feel encouraged to follow Jonathan and his writing and his teachings. A lot of interesting stuff he has out there, and a lot of interesting thoughts and conversations he has out there that have been helpful for me. So his Instagram handle is @Jonathan_Merritt, and I will link all of that in the show notes. I will link a way for you to get this book. And I hope this conversation is as helpful and fruitful for y'all as it was for me. And I want to say thank you again for Jonathan for allowing me to have this conversation with you and for doing the work that you do, because it is so needed and so special. So I'm going to stop doting on Jonathan and just introduce you to my conversation with him. So here it is. Okay, guys, welcome to a new episode of You Need Therapy. I have my guest here that I just prepped you on. Jonathan, welcome.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me on.
I am so excited to get into some of the questions that I have for you, but I want to start just for my information and anybody who's listening. Can you give us a background? I know you're in New York right now.
Yes.
You told me that you possibly know more people in Nashville than you do in New York. But I want to know, where did you come from? I have this idea that you grew up in the Bible Belt. Is that correct?
You nailed it.
Okay.
Exactly.
I want to hear the cliff notes, as much as you want to make them cliff notes, version of your story that has kind of gotten you to where you are now in New York.
So it's been a long, long road. I was raised in a super religious home. I feel like that's relevant maybe to our discussion. A fundamentalist Christian evangelical home. My dad was a megachurch pastor, is a megachurch pastor, a televangelist, TV preacher. He was president of the Southern Baptist Convention. So you can't grow up much more evangelical than I did. And it was 2012 when, you know, we all have these moments, like I often call them like firewood moments, right? Where an axe falls and just sort of splits things in two. And that was the moment that I was outed. And I was outed by somebody who I thought was a friend of mine, but proved not to be a friend. And it threw my whole life into disarray and resulted really in moving from the Bible Belt, from Atlanta to New York City, where I live now. You know, I've been here for 10 years, started out really just as a full-time writer, a journalist, an author, a speaker. Then a few years ago, I decided I would try something kind of new and fun and creative. I would try writing a children's book. And so that's how I got where I am.
So, question, your story back when you said you were outed, was that an accident? Did that feel malicious? What was that like?
Malicious is the word for sure. I was serving part-time on staff with my dad at his church, doing as a teaching pastor. I was writing a lot of articles and books. I'd written two books. I was under contract to write a third book. So I was kind of developing my own voice in this world and kind of learning to stand on my own two feet. I was 29 years old, getting ready to turn 30. And a friend who I had met once, we'd kind of corresponded, you know, via email, and we had become friends kind of digitally, but we'd met once before. I trusted him with a lot of secrets, that he knew things that other people didn't know. And I think he thought that the right thing for him to do in that moment was to kind of push me out of the closet. And so he wrote an essay at salon.com. It was a news story. It was at the Washington Post. It was at Religion News Service, Christianity Today. It just became a really overwhelming experience, something that I was totally unprepared for, but I had to figure out really quick how to make peace with it and how to sort through the rubble. So yeah, it was a crazy, crazy experience. I mean, anybody who has ever been through that, I say it was an act of narrative thievery. Somebody steals a story that is not theirs and then chooses to do with that story something you would not choose to do, to tell it in a way you would not choose to tell it. And so in many ways, you know, I'm lucky to be alive. Yeah. There are a lot of people that have been in similar situations and they're not here. They can't do this interview with you because they are no longer alive. And so it's a really, really scary and dangerous thing, but I survived it. And it sort of has helped me to become who I am in many ways.
I'm so glad you shared that, because when you said publicly outed, I'm thinking like to your friends and your family, like close around you, but you're saying like publicly there are publications. And that's how that happened. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was not the top 10 most fun moments of my life.
Yeah, I would imagine. And so you moved to New York after that.
Yep.
I'm curious for you, was that move to find safety again? Was that move to start fresh? Was that move because this didn't feel like I was accepted in this space anymore?
Well, the answer is, you know, yes, yes, and yes, in some ways. I think for a lot of people who grow up in households that have a strong sense of kind of familial identity, there's almost like a gravitational pull. And it sort of draws you into that family and in such a way that your whole identity is wrapped up in the family's identity, right? It's like who I am is only known to me in relation to you. In particular, I would say my dad was a really strong figure for me growing up. And so I only knew who I was in relation to who he was. And in order to differentiate, in order to individuate, right, I needed not just some relational space, but I needed geographical space. And I knew that really well. So for me, it was like, I can't move across town. I have to go far, far away. And I had been in New York. There was a friend of mine who had moved here from Atlanta, and I said to her, she had three kids, one of whom had special needs. And I said, why would you move to New York? New York's so hard. You move from Atlanta where you had this big house. And she said, you know, there are times in life where there comes a whisper, and it's a totally legitimate life decision to say no to that whisper. But if you do, it will go away and it will never come back again. And I could begin to hear a whisper that had been there since I was a kid when I came to this city for the first time and I fell in love with it. And I told my dad, I said, I'm going to move there one day. I'm going to make it. And he laughed and he said, yeah, everybody says they're going to move to New York and make it. And I said, I think that's my whisper. And if I don't pay attention to that, it may go away and never come again. And so when I landed on September the 13th, I sold everything I had. I rented out my house. I sold my car. I packed up what was left into a moving van. And, drove into a neighborhood I'd never heard of to live with people I'd never met in an apartment I'd never seen. And that was almost 11 years ago.
Which it sounds like, oh, that's so crazy to do that. But at the same time, it sounds like it also was a safe experience for you to do that too. Like what might be crazy is for you to stay in the space that you are in, not being able to do the things that you know that you need to do. I'm also curious for you, because I actually was reading some of your writing. I sent one of your articles that you posted, I don't know if it was this week, it was more recent, about sexuality in the church. Mm-hmm. And I sent it to actually my sister-in-law, who works in a church nearby in the like youth program. And she was like, oh my gosh, this is the stuff that we need to be reading more about and sharing more about. And it was about kind of changing your mind. That was kind of what I got from it. The themes. And so for you, what has that been like in spaces? Because we've been on this podcast kind of talking about not specifically Christianity, but faith in religion as a whole and what it looks like to, I like that you're talking about individuate and differentiate, to also identify that I get to make sense of this with how it works for me, and I get to change those things and always get to stay the same. And there is some grief and loss in that too, because not everybody believes that. And so I'm curious for you, because it sounds like there weren't many people who knew your story and your real identity until this person outed you. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so when that did come out, what was that like for you in the Bible Belt specifically? That's the religion and that's the Christian community that I know, because that's I've grown up here my whole life. What was that like for you? And what was the process for you to not, I guess, the phrase that's coming to mind is like throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of thing.
Well, a lot of people do who are placed in my situation, because, you know, the moment that that happens, you lose a lot of friends. People are just gone. And there are people that before that day, I was friends with them. We texted, we hung out, and I have never heard from them again. There are opportunities that vanish, disappear, professional opportunities. I had a rising career. I was speaking at huge conferences. I was at speaking in, you know, giant mega churches one day, and then the next day I wasn't getting any of those invites. And so there is always loss when you have one of these like inciting incidents and you say, hey, the way I related to this community needs to change. Or the thing that you thought I believed or that I was isn't exactly right. And anytime that happens, people go, yeah, you know what? I'm not down for that. I'm not okay with that. And that's a sort of conservative religious impulse, right? That says that the value of community is not diversity, but sameness. Mm. And communities that value sameness and stringent religious communities, by the way, on the far right and the far left, who really value sameness and feel threatened by difference, then they only know how to respond to difference by othering and by separation. And so that often is what happens. Somebody comes out and they're never seen or heard from again themselves because they realize that they're not safe in these communities. But, you know, for me, moving to New York was such a gift because where I lived in the South, there were a lot of ways to be Christian, but they were kind of in like a little bit of a cluster. There was like a, they kind of clustered together and none of them really made sense. You were conservative Catholic, you were conservative evangelical, or you were, you know, still a somewhat conservative non-denominational or mainline Protestant. Regardless, you know, homophobia was like in the water. And so you were going to encounter that in religious spaces. You were going to encounter misunderstanding and confusion in religious spaces. And so when I moved to New York, I kind of assumed that was what it was going to be like. But, you know, New York has infinite varieties of everything. And I suddenly came into contact with all kinds of faith communities that were very different. These faith communities made space for people like me. And when they said, come as you are, or all are welcome, they meant it.
Oh.
And I think that allowed me to really save my faith in many ways and not walk away.
That part feels really important where you just said, where they said, come as you are, or all is welcome, and they meant it. This might be my bias, so I'm going to call that out before I say this, but I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
And I can count on less than one hand how many times I have actually seen that to be carried out the way I understand it. And so I'm curious, when you were living in the South, was that something that was on your mind where you were like, yeah, all are welcome? Like what you just said, like all are welcome, mm-hmm. and we love everybody, but we also behind the scenes know there are some contingencies to that.
Yeah. And well, you know, you walk into in a lot of religious communities and there is what someone says, and then there's how someone behaves. And those things are not always the same, right? The therapeutic term or the psychological term is cognitive dissonance. We often live in this cognitive dissonance. And so I will often tell you, oh my gosh, I'm so nice and I'm so loyal. And then I'm just like trashing people behind their backs, right? And I'm living in cognitive dissonance. And the truth is not revealed by what I say. The truth is revealed by how I act, because the truth translates into behavior or into action. In a lot of these communities, the phraseology is they use the language of hospitality. The language of hospitality is used, but the behavior of that community never rises to the aspirations of the language of hospitality. And so they'll say things like, yeah, all are welcome, and you come and you're welcome to walk in the door. You're welcome to write a check to the church. They'll cash it. But then you say something like, hey, I'd love to volunteer in your preschool ministry, or I'd like to join a small group or teach. I'd like to go through your membership class or help park cars in the morning. And you begin to find that all are not actually welcome in the same way. And so there are limitations on that welcome that are not communicated, right? It's as if all are welcome needs an asterisk at the end with some fine print at the bottom, but that's all been sort of left out. And you don't really find that fine print until you do something that violates it. You reach the ends or the limitations of that hospitality. And that happens all the time. You say, thank you so much for including me and welcoming me. I'd love for you to perform my wedding, or I'd love for you to baptize my child. And you immediately run up against those limitations, and then you're given a nice talking to. And usually that's when people walk away and they feel duped or tricked.
Yeah. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking about, there was a couple years ago, I had this like moment where I felt like, what are we doing? Like, I can't keep going to this place that I feel like I have to show up differently in. Mm-hmm. And not even about like the who I'm dating or like what I'm doing on the weekend. It felt all encompassing. Like the person that I show up as here is not the person I am when I'm at home or when I'm with people that I feel comfortable with. I think that was something that was coming up a lot. It's like, I don't feel like I can really ask questions. I don't feel like I can really, and not even like in a way that's trying to like find something out. It's like, no, I'm just curious about this. I want to know more mm-hmm. about this. There wasn't that space. And I've been in those spaces in different areas, not just in religious spaces, but even like in certain schools or friend groups and stuff like that. And I had this moment where I was like, what am I doing? Like, I am trying to fit myself into this thing and continue to go on with this thing because it's something that has given me safety. It's helped me contextualize the world. It's given me some kind of hope at times. It has given me a way to almost like construct the world, but it's not fitting with how I have learned the world to be and what makes really sense to me. So I was talking to a therapist at the time and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I just wanted to throw it all out. I was like, I just think that we're just people floating on a rock and blah, 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 blah. And like was going this whole existential kind of faith crisis. And through the conversation I had with her and multiple conversations, what was so helpful and kind of what I'm hearing from you is just because it's what you're looking for isn't where you are, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And that was so helpful for me. And also she helped me not be so judgmental, because I got that part of me that was like, how dare you not think the way I think, or how dare you not be as understanding or compassionate or whatever. And she was like, everybody's trying to feel safe, and that looks different for different people, and it sucks sometimes what that looks like. But just like you feel threatened right now, other people feel threatened. And I think if we were having that conversation, it would look different. All that to say, I want the people listening to hear, if you resonate with any of this stuff, or you're thinking like, I don't know, like I couldn't do that. If something like that happened to me, I'd be done for. Or maybe that did happen for me and I did throw the baby out with the bathwater. It was so helpful to hear somebody say, just because it doesn't exist where you are, it does not mean it doesn't exist somewhere else. And what I'm hearing you are saying is, it did exist somewhere else for me.
Yeah.
And it was so life-giving. Hey guys, Kat here. And I have something very important to talk to you guys about. Now, I know you're used to hearing me talk about therapy and how important it can be for you and how transformative it can be for you in your life. But if you're somebody who's tried therapy and it just hasn't done the trick, or you just need a little extra boost, I think I've found the next best thing. And the next best thing might just be Cozy Earth and their bamboo sheets and their bamboo pajamas. It feels like you are stepping into a buttery, cozy, warm, and cool hug all at the same time. And that's just their pajamas. Don't even get me started on their sheets. As soon as I touched them, I said, okay, we're changing the sheets right now. And the bonus is they come in this really cute travel tote, so you can take your sheets with you wherever you go. Elevate your summer getaway with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear, ensuring the comfort of home wherever you roam. We're all in luck because you can discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code YOUNEED at checkout to get 35% off. Yes, 35% off. And let them know that we sent you. You need therapy after you check out.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Here's the thing. Part of maturity in life, very general statement, is learning to differentiate between a thing and a version of a thing. So a lot of people will say they have a bad marriage and they get divorced and they say, I'm never getting married again. And they've confused a thing with a version of a thing. You got a really bad version of a thing. And there are good versions of a thing as well. There are a lot of people who they go to a gym and their gym is just like a meat locker, right? Or they're meatheads and they feel stupid, or they have some creepy person who looks at them weird and makes them feel weird about their body. And they go, you know what? A gym is not for me. And they never go back. Well, there are other gyms. There are women's gyms. There are safer gyms. There are gyms with different cultures, the different types of gyms. Because you had a bad version of a gem doesn't mean gems are bad. And maturity means learning to differentiate between what is a thing and what is a kind of thing. So a lot of people will go into religious communities, whether it's Christian or not, and they have a bad experience because they experience, you know, bigotry or corruption or dishonesty. And they go, they don't say what you should say, which is this is a bad version of a thing. They go, the thing is bad. And they walk away and they can never come back. And I can understand that impulse that sometimes we overreact because the pain is so great. We want to protect ourselves from experiencing that pain again. If you continue to search for a good version of the thing, there's a chance that you'll encounter another bad version of the thing and you'll get hurt again. And you don't want to risk that. And so instead of risking that, you just say the thing itself is bad and you sever yourself off from every version of that thing and you ensure that you will never get hurt again. And that's true.
Yeah.
But you know what you also do is you sever yourself off from the possibility of the good gifts of a good version of that thing, that there might actually be a version of marriage in which you're known and loved and accepted. And it's a good version. And there may be a gem where you can find health and you can find what you're really looking for in terms of your own, you know, rhythms of exercise. And so you can find that out there. And those are good gifts. But if you cut yourself off from the thing, you'll never find that. And I will tell you, in my experience here in New York, I have found a very good version of the thing. I go to a church here called Good Shepherd New York, and I'm an elder there. And we are a church that we don't have a statement of faith. We don't police people's beliefs. Everybody is welcome, no matter what your identity is. And in fact, what we say is we ask you to bring your full self and that the full history of your religious experience. And a lot of people bring a lot of joy from their religious past. And a lot of people bring a lot of pain from their religious past. And actually, we welcome both, knowing that there is wisdom in the fullness of your experience, whatever it is. Well, that's a good version of a thing. But a lot of people think about their communities and they go, I've gone to a lot of versions of that thing in my community and they've been really, really bad. And I would say that there are parts of the world and parts of the country where there are a higher proportion of really bad versions of that thing. And so that requires you to do a lot of homework on the front end to protect yourself so that you're not re-traumatized, that you don't just trust hospitable language. The language of hospitality is verified before you begin to sort of like trust fall into a community. and risk being heartbroken. So there are ways to safeguard against it without throwing, as you said, to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it requires a certain level of intentionality, I think.
What came up for me as you were saying that is the idea of the proportionality bias, where if something happens, like the reaction needs to be as big, or if something happens, what I make up in my head of what that means has to be as big. And sometimes it's not proportional, and that's uncomfortable and kind of weird to sit with, but it sometimes is the truth. And so to walk back into a space to get a different version of a thing, there are ways that you can protect yourself and do that safely without completely cutting yourself off from the experience and taking an experience that can be really good away from you. So I want to kind of transition a little bit, because I'm talking to you because you wrote this children's book. And I need to just say this before I ask any questions, because two things surprised me about this book. One, I cried reading this book, and I didn't expect that, because I got it in the mail and I just was like, oh, this is so cute. I started reading it, and then I was like, why are there tears coming out of my eyes? This is a children's book. That I don't know if that was the point. I was really surprised by that, and also really grateful, because the reason that I got emotional was because this was a book that I wish existed when I was younger. The other part is I was surprised that faith was part of this book. It wasn't the point of the book, but I just was like, oh, that's interesting. And I was like sitting with myself, you know, wiping my tears after reading this, just reflecting on it. And I was like, wait a second, I want to go back to that, because I didn't expect that to pop up there. And so I want you to share a little bit about what this book means to you. And then I want to talk about why it was so important, and why I felt like it would have been so important for me, and also why it was important for you to include what you included in here.
I would love to talk about the faith aspect, because it surprised a lot of reviewers that it ended up in there as well. But the book, I knew I wanted to write a children's book. I'd felt this spark, this stirring inside of me to write a children's book. And I live in this little community, little commune, almost like community in Manhattan. And we do a happy hour every Friday at 5:30. And so one of the happy hour coordinators here, whom you know, you've interviewed on this podcast, Shauna Nyquist, I sort of confessed. I said, I want to write a children's book. And she's like, well, what would you write it about? And I'm like, well, I haven't figured that out yet. I haven't like made up my mind. And she goes, why don't you write about being a gunkle? And it was just like she blew on the ember inside of me and it became a flame. And I was like, yes, that's it. And I started working on it the very next day. But you know, if you're going to write about being a gunkle, well, how are you going to write about being a gunkle? You're going to write what you know. Mm-hmm. It was sort of becoming autobiographical, because I only know the kind of gunkle that I am. I didn't have a gunkle growing up. And so I began to write my experiences into this. And faith is so deeply a part of my experience. And it has been even with these kids. I mean, we have a chapel in the middle of this little, like a close, we call it the commune sort of area where we live at this old former seminary property here. And on Sundays, we all like get together and we go down to the chapel. And I wanted to show that, because what I hoped these kids would see is that there are going to be people in this world that are going to tell you, you can either be a person of faith or you can be fill in the blank, a woman preacher, a person who votes for a certain political party, gay. And they're going to give you a false choice. And that's going to be conscripted into you, and you are going to think you have to choose. And what's going to happen is you're likely going to have to choose the thing you can change about who you are. And I did not want people to live with that false choice. And so I really wrote this book. The book is about a kid named Henry. He's struggling to sort of fit in, and he's unique. He's crazy. He dresses really weird. His socks don't match. He likes doing math homework, and everybody else hates it, of course. And his gunkle comes for this visit, and they have this fabulous adventure together. And he sees that what makes us different is what makes us beautiful. That is our gift to the world. And for a lot of children, what makes you different is a liability. It's a risk. And so you try to hide it and cover it up. You try to change it to become like everyone else. And what I hope kids who read this will come away with is that those things are the most special gifts you can give to the world, because that's what makes you uniquely you. And we don't need you to become like everyone else. We need you to embrace who you are.
I wish I could just clip that, what you just said, and just carry it in my pocket everywhere that I go, into every conversation I have, because being different is a liability. That really stuck out as a child, being different as a liability. And I also resonate so much with the, you can either be a person of faith or you can be something else. I can only, same way, I can only speak from my experience of what I was taught, or even what I picked up about what I was taught. And I've had a lot of conversations, both with clients, with friends, with people in my community, around struggling to be the right kind of person of faith. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but to be a person of faith, I have to be all of these things and check all of these boxes. And so my work becomes checking the boxes versus being the person of faith. And in order to check those boxes, I have to find a way to not check these other boxes, or like make these boxes go away or hide these boxes. And the phrase, like, being good, whether that's good enough or being a good girl or a good boy, comes up a lot in these conversations. And when you don't fit into what is, I guess, the sameness, going back to what we were talking about earlier, when you don't fit into that, it feels like that's bad. Yeah. And I'm speaking to this, and I'm saying this as a cisgendered, white, heterosexual person. There's so much privilege in that, where there is boxes that I like could check kind of easily. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are a lot of boxes that I was like, ugh, I can't check that one. And like, how do I erase this? And so I love this book because it speaks to everybody. It doesn't have to just be about your sexuality or how you dress or where you live and what kind of house you live in or anything like that. It can speak to any of those things. And if I had a conversation, because what I think this is, it's a conversation starter for a lot of people, even adults. Like, I want to bring this to like an adult circle or adult book club. You know, we have those, I feel like, are ramping up everywhere. This should be in an adult book club, because I can have a more fruitful conversation about the themes that I felt popping up in here than some of these other 400 page books that I've read recently. And to spread the message that being different is not a liability, to me at this point in my life, it's like, duh. But at the same time, that message feels really hard. And it feels, again, the word that it's coming up is like scary for people. And so I guess I'm curious for you, when you're having those conversations, or maybe you see the discourse online places, what would you offer? What would you want to add to the conversation when part of that conversation is like, but it still feels like a liability? What would you say to people who disagree with that?
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
what would you offer? What would you want to add to the conversation when part of that conversation is like, but it still feels like a liability? What would you say to people who disagree with that?
I think that you just said something that was really interesting that I want to click on, which is it feels like a liability. And that is true. And what can happen is that we can confuse feeling with fact oftentimes. Now, they're not unrelated, by the way, because there's wisdom and knowledge in your emotions. You can walk into a room and go, this guy feels like a creep. Well, that's not a fact. It doesn't make him a creep, but maybe you should listen to that you're picking up on something, that your emotions are also a source of wisdom. I was told when I was growing up, how you feel doesn't matter. And that's not true, right? Your emotions matter, but your emotions are not bringing you pure fact. And so it's true. You feel that your differences are liabilities. And to some extent, that's because the world has sort of taught you that. There are two things that I think are part of growing, not only learning, but also unlearning. And oftentimes you have to unlearn in order to learn. So we have to unlearn what the world has taught us about difference so that we can learn what is true about difference. And for a lot of people, that's just like a bit of a mind shift, is like, not what is true, but what do you need to unlearn that is not true first? So what do you do first? What do you do second? Unlearning, then learning. The other thing that I will say is that, and you just said this a minute ago, is like, you know, okay, the idea that like embracing my difference is important. I mean, yeah, at this point we're fully grown adults. We're doing our work. We've done our work. We've read the books, right? Duh. On the other hand, so much of growth in life is not just about learning new things. It's about reminding yourself of truths that you're so tempted to forget. We're tempted to forget that what makes us different makes us beautiful, makes us unique, makes us special. It's our gift to the world. We forget the things that as little kids that we would hear from the safe people, the empathetic witnesses in our lives, the Mr. Rogers on the TV who says, you make this day a special day by just your being you, and I like you just the way you are. Well, I remembered that. I hear that, but I'm so tempted to forget it because then I have to be, as a big grown-up, I have to go out in the world and I forgot what Mr. Rogers told me. So I have to remember that. I have to remind myself of that. And that's an ongoing and active process. And so that's what I wanted to do with this book. And, you know, even to your point about faith, it's why I wanted to make that point explicit. In fact, I'll repeat that section from memory. It says, at church the next day, my gunkle sings loudly. He prays and gives thanks, and he does it devoutly. His bright colored outfit makes two women stare. When we leave, they both snicker, but he doesn't care. And there are two things that are embedded in that. One is a reminder of what I said before, that you don't have to choose. People will tell you that you can't be a person of faith and fill in the blank. And that is false. You can hold those two identities together and you don't have to choose one just because somebody else says you have to. And the second is, as you hold those identities together to embrace the fullness of who you are, when you enter into certain spaces, you may encounter misunderstanding or bigotry. You may encounter ridicule, and that's okay. Just like the character in this book, you can hold your head high, you can embrace who you are, you can live your life as who you know you truly are deep down in the place where we know things, and that's okay. And I hope both of those things sort of came through in that part of the book.
Yeah, I have to say this because it's not going to leave my brain. You sounded just like Mr. Rogers when you said that.
Well, I used to watch him a lot. In fact, here's a little Easter egg, and there are a lot of Easter eggs in this book, but if you turn to the front page, you'll see my dedication is to Mr. Rogers, because I think he really saved my life. As a kid who felt different, he was the one who told me. When the world wasn't giving us stories like this. They weren't giving us models like this. You know, the only model I had for being a grown-up gay person was somebody with a heroin needle, somebody in a hospital bed dying of AIDS. These are the things that in the late 80s and in the 90s, these were the images we were given. These were the stories that we were being told. They weren't stories like this, of well-adjusted individuals who were integrated into family units, who were valued members of these communities. So I wanted to tell people a different story, but the only person who was telling me a different story was a guy named Fred Rogers, who came to me via public television. And so I felt it was appropriate to dedicate this book to him.
I wonder if that's part of like the emotions that came out when I was reading this, because I saw that. I watch that every single day after school. And as you said that, I'm thinking, what's so funny is our families were putting us in front of a TV show. And I remember watching like in the basement by myself. And we were getting this messaging that like they didn't even realize that we were getting. And if they knew, I don't know if there are certain places that would have thought differently or what have you. I'm glad they didn't. But that is also so important that you just said about the images that people used to receive and the ideas that people used to receive. Because if we are not willing as a society to pay any attention to the examples and realness and the reality of what that is now, that's all we're going to have is the people dying of AIDS in hospital beds and what you just said. And that is so limiting. And the word that I'm hearing in my head is that sucks. Like that we have to keep on using old misinformation when there's so much new information out there that can be so loving and kind and helpful. That's why we need these kinds of books. Also, why we need, I guess I have to say this because this is one of my fears, and it has to do with just part of where I live too, is my fear is that like, what happens if these books aren't allowed in certain places? Like what happens if this, and I don't even know, I'm not even thinking, I guess even public schools, like what happens if these books aren't allowed in places that they need to be?
Well, the risk there is that we get stuck. We get stuck where we were as children, where you maybe didn't have a model for being a woman who had opinions, for being a woman who had her own career in her own right, for being a woman who was a leader, for being a woman who desired ambitious things, for being a woman who maybe doesn't want children. And in my case, it's being stuck in a world where being queer can lead to depression and anxiety and suicide, and where you feel threatened and you feel misunderstood because you don't have any representation of yourself in popular culture. And so, you know, one of the things I'll say about this book, if somebody's listening and maybe they're from Nashville and they're going, ooh, I don't know. The interesting thing about the book is it never explains what a gunkle is. So I've empowered parents in this book to have a conversation with their kid and however they want to have that conversation. That nobody in this book is sexualized. Nobody in this book has a relationship. I mean, except for Henry's parents. This is a story about a child learning to embrace his difference in a world where gunkles happen to exist, which is the world where our children live. And so it simply is a story that shows this character interacting in a really normal way. And I think these are the kinds of stories that we should be telling.
I'm glad you explained that, because maybe people who are listening are like, wait, what? You just said that you're the cisgendered white heterosexual person. What do you mean? This book isn't about the gunkle being gay. I didn't get that at all. I got what you just got. And I was like, that's what I wish that more people had. It's like, it can be anything from how you dress to what you want to be when you grow up to what you don't want to be when you grow up to. I even think about like the things I liked doing after school, like the sports I was playing or the hobbies that I picked up. And I wonder, and sometimes I'm like, this gets me in a cycle that is going to be good for nobody. But I wonder, like, if I was allowed to be kind of like how you're posturing Henry to be in this book, if I was allowed to have that freedom, what the heck would I be doing? Like, I'm so interested in that. And my fear is I don't want our world to kind of be stifled in what we are. Yeah. Even from like when you brought up like a woman having a career or doing this or having kids or not having kids or having an opinion, so many opinions and beliefs and things were stifled forever. Yeah. And they're just now starting to break some of that. Yeah. There's so much magic I feel like gets lost.
Yeah. I mean, it's like women were allowed to have credit cards in 1973.
It's crazy.
I mean, chew on that for a minute. And by the way, there's no guarantee that we'll never go back to 1973 unless we all as communities say, we want to continue to create space for people to be who they are. And that's important. Even if you feel threatened, even if you feel confused, we want to create space for people to be who they are. And so that for me is really important. You know, when I was growing up, I kind of thought we were moving in one direction. Everything was just going to become more and more racism would be a thing of the past. Homophobia would be a thing of the past. Eventually, with enough time, we'll get there. And what I'm seeing now happening in the world is telling us that that's not guaranteed, that progress doesn't always move in a steady march in one direction. And so if we want people to feel loved and protected in society, there has to be ongoing efforts, not just to make laws,
yeah,
but to tell stories. And that is important. You know, a lot of people have written about this, but there's a very famous quote by a guy named Andrew Fletcher. And he says, "Let me make the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." Mm. Right? The idea is that the stories that we tell and the stories that we sing, they shape our world more profoundly than just passing a law. It doesn't mean that laws don't matter, right? Of course, laws matter. I'm grateful for this, for Civil Rights Act and for some of the laws that have been passed that protect our liberties. But the idea is that we are shaped by the songs and the stories that we tell. And I have long understood that the future world that we will create is largely a function of the stories we choose to tell our children. Because those stories will weave themselves into their DNA and they will shape the kinds of adults they become and the kinds of worlds that they will create even after we're long gone. And so I take this very seriously. It's such a fun thing to write a book, but it's also serious business. And I made sure to balance both of those things at the same time.
And I think you did a really good job. One of the last things that I want to say, because this I heard this very loudly as you were speaking, is this idea that somebody's safeness does not threaten another person's safeness.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of, I don't know what the actual term, I know there's a term for this, but, and I think it more has to do with like economics, but like somebody's gain doesn't equal somebody's loss. I think that pops up a lot where like, well, if you're accepted for who you are, then what happens to what I am? Or if this faith or this sect of what have you believes this, what happens to my beliefs? And it feels like we're constantly trying to protect our own whatever it is. But what I am coming to know, and part of that is in hearing what you're saying, is that there's space for us to all kind of feel safe if we allow that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so this is the thing. Some of this is because we live in a capitalistic society and a consumeristic society. And so we're programmed to think of everything as a pie.
Yeah.
And here's the pie. And if you get a piece, that's one less piece that's available to me, right? Because we're thinking in terms of goods and resources, because that's our whole life is built around goods and resources and profit and selling and buying, right? And so if I take a mug off the shelf, that's one less mug that can be bought by the next person, right? There's a supply, and we think in terms of supply. But the problem is when we start to lay those concepts over things that are immaterial and are not supply limited. So something like liberty, making a man free does not mean that there's less liberty for the woman. It isn't a pie. You know, in order for the man to have a slice of the pie, there's unlimited slices. We can all have a slice of the pie. And we have to actually begin to own these false assumptions about the way the world works in order to build a world that is reckoning with the reality of freedom. And there are a lot of people out there that say, if I make you free, then somehow I'm less free. We had this as a gay man. I think about this a lot. We had this concept with marriage. I grew up hearing, well, if gay people are allowed to marry, somehow it ruins marriage for straight people. And first of all, straight people have been ruining marriage since it was invented, right? So nobody's going to ruin your marriage except you, right? I can't make you a terrible husband. You're already that. So that is sort of a weird idea, but there's an underlying concept there that somehow, if you have a thing that I have, it's going to affect my thing. And that's a false belief. Of course, you know, like they legalized gay marriage and nobody, you know, it wasn't like a wave of straight people were affected by that. Like straight people just kind of their marriages kept working exactly how they were working
right
before. So there was an exposure of that weird concept, that weird idea that the whole thing would fall apart if you let other people have access to it. And I think that's true in a lot of ways with all kinds of liberties. And we're adjudicating that right now. And it goes back to stories. And by the way, a lot of people know that stories matter in this way, which is why certain kinds of stories, including this one, are now met not with embrace and celebration, but with fear, with resistance, with anger. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you go, gosh, I'm hearing him say this and I agree with him, like this is the kind of story that needs to exist. That's why I say, please go buy my book. And that sounds very self-serving. It's not self-serving. Here's what I mean by that. In order for people to take risks on these kinds of stories so that they continue to exist, we have to show the decision makers that there's a market for them, that we will buy them, that we will read them to our children, that we will sew them into the fabric of our society. And the only way we do that is by supporting this kind of storytelling. And so it's not enough for us to go, well, that's good. That's nice. We have to, by the decisions we make, we have to support this kind of storytelling because it does matter. It matters more than we know.
Yeah, I want you, in kind of in closing this out, if you could, because I felt like this meant a lot to me, and reading the article helped me kind of work through some things that I had been like just frustrated with myself. But the article, I'm blanking on the name of it, but you just posted it about like the theologian that shifted his mind on the gay, was it gay marriage?
Yeah. So I wrote about a guy who was sort of for many, many years, he was a dean at Duke University's Divinity School. And he was for many years, he sort of defended the idea that Christianity and being gay were incompatible. And he's now much older and he has changed his mind on that. And he's sort of come out to say, hey, I was wrong. So I wrote about that and I was writing about the way that these conversations have changed. And also what the story was really about was not just about this one guy changing his mind, but about giving us, all of us, giving ourselves freedom to change our mind.
Yeah. And I think that is an important to anybody that's coming up to me as we think about like sharing these stories and buying this book and supporting and shifting the stories. I will speak for myself. For a lot of my life, the story that I was sharing and the way that I would have approached this book or the article that you put out was very different. And for me, in order for me to change my mind, I had to also wrestle with a lot of feelings around how I used to show up. There was some shame there and there's some guilt there and there's a lot of sadness. And it's so helpful when we see people do that brave thing that come out and say like, oh, I think I was wrong. And I think that might have impacted people. And I've done some work and I've learned some things and that's not what I know to be true anymore. And so I'm going to be brave enough and have courage enough to share what I believe to be true. I think that's really important. And I think that is something along with sharing these stories is opening up space for people who are afraid to have admitted that maybe the stories they are sharing in their past might have not been the best stories at times. So I really enjoyed that article. And I'm so thankful you wrote this book for many reasons, but one, because that is how I found out who you are. And now I feel like I'm going to continue to learn from a lot of your writing and listening to the things you put on social media and out in the world. So thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. And I hope people will take away exactly what you just said. The idea that like, do not be content to believe whatever your chosen political party tells you you should believe, or whatever the church that you happen to attend or be a member of tells you to believe. Instead, begin to listen to the wisdom that's coming into your life from the people that you meet and the people that you love. There's a great quote by Frederick Buechner, and it says, listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery it is, in the boredom and the pain of it, no less than in the excitement and gladness. Touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it, because in the last analysis, All moments are key moments, and life itself is grace. So listen to your life. This book is an example, maybe to help people listen a little bit to my life. And I hope when they read it that they feel touched by it.
Yeah, I feel like they will. So where can they find it, and where can they find you?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram, Jonathan Merritt, or you can find me on my website, jonathanmerritt.com. You can subscribe to my newsletter there. And they can buy the book anywhere books are sold. I love for people to buy it at Target, because hopefully then Target will start carrying it in more and more stores. If you don't want to buy from Target.com, you can also buy it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or anywhere that you choose to buy books. But I say buy it for you, your children, your friends' children, your stepchildren, your godchildren, your neighbor's children, whoever children you have in your life. And I thank you for doing it, and hope it's a blessing.
Thank you so much.
My gosh, thank you so much.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.